You love guns? Do you hate guns? It's common sense.
The United States today unveiled what it's calling the largest North Korean sanctions to date as the Trump administration continues to seek ways to isolate the rogue nuclear state. The new sanctions are aimed at disrupting North Korean shipping and trading companies and vessels. The Treasury administration said that they are determined through these efforts to increase the pressure on the North Korean regime and show Kim Jong-un that there's no new path for him but to denuclearize. This is USA Radio News.
Addiction. There was a day when the word addiction was just another word. If you're battling addiction, it's not easy to ask for help. It's hard to admit you really need it. Call and end addiction. Call and connect with representatives of a treatment center or rehab facility. Call and end addiction. 1-800-665-0239. Some insurance plans help pay for the cost of treatment. Be sure to check your policy or call your agent to see if you're covered. It's not easy to talk about your addictions or those of someone you care about. It's hard for you to experience. It's hard for them to watch. The first step to ending addiction starts with one free, private, and no-obligation call. Addiction. There can be a day when the word addiction is just another word again. Your life is not over. There are things you still need to do. The first thing to do is call and end addiction. 1-800-665-0239. 1-800-665-0239. 1-800-665-0239.
The police officer assigned to Madre Stoneman Douglas High School resigned yesterday. Now he is under investigation for failing to enter a building as a gunman opened fire and killed 17 people. Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel says Deputy Scott Peterson should have went in. Former New York City Police Lieutenant Darren Porcher has some strong words for Peterson.
Scott Peterson knew what he signed up for, and this was an atrocity because ultimately he was between the bullets and those innocent children that lost their lives.
Florida's Governor Rick Scott reveals his plan to keep schools safe from shooters. USA Radio Network's John DeMaster has more.
The governor's office putting out a statement that says the plan will include improvements to school safety, along with plans to keep guns away from people that are dealing with mental health issues. It was last Wednesday when a gunman walked into a school in Parkland, Florida, opened fire, taking the lives of 17 people. For USA Radio News, I'm John DeMaster.
You can always check us out on usaradio.com. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Allyn-Root. I'm a father of four, and I worry every day about this dangerous world. There are so many things that could go wrong. Economic collapse, stock market crash, terrorist attack, war with North Korea. There's a lot to worry about when it comes to protecting your income, assets, and your family's future. Thankfully, my good friends at Tangible Investments are your safe haven from the storm. Call now, and Tangible Investments will send you, absolutely free, a 1 ounce American Silver Eagle, along with your guide for investing in precious metals. To receive your free American Silver Eagle, call toll-free 800-780-9000. That's 800-780-9000.
Today, President Donald Trump, for the first time as President of the United States, addressed the CPAC audience. Let's take a listen as he remembers the great Reverend Billy Graham.
And this week, our nation lost an incredible leader who devoted his life to helping us understand what those words really mean. Leader. He was a leader. He's a great man. We will never forget the historic crowds, that voice, the energy, and the profound faith of a preacher named Billy Graham. Great man and great family, Franklin Graham, great family. And they were for us, I'll tell you, they were for us. Right from the beginning, they were for us. As a young man, Billy decided to devote his life to God. That choice not only changed his life, it changed our country, and indeed, it even changed the world. Reverend Graham's belief in the power of God's word gave hope to millions and millions who listened to him with his very beautiful but very simple message, God loves you.
For USA Radio News, my name is Tim Berg.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Well, we'll be back with the sports guys as soon as I tell you about the weather. And, Bill, I have to tell you that you certainly wouldn't be, taking your boat out this weekend if, in fact, it was warm enough to do so. But I have to say, as soon as I talk about the weather, the other day when it was so beautiful, I went by Round Valley, and you'd have thought it was May because, there were boats out there and boaters, and they were really enjoying themselves. But in any event, it won't be this weekend. We have about a 90% rain and fog this weekend, and I guess we should say, although it was 80 or 90% predicted, it was 100%. And tonight, I keep getting all these signs on. Anyway, it distracted me. But tonight we have 60% chance of drizzle and then fog. Probably later on it'll only be, after about 2 a.m., it'll just be drizzle and then widespread fog. So be careful. And then Saturday tomorrow, we had start out drizzle before 9 a.m., and then rain likely afternoon. We have about a 60% chance of rain. Again, watch out for that widespread fog, mainly before 9 a.m. And into tomorrow night, Saturday night, 100% chance of rain. So it's going to be rainy, but not cold. So there shouldn't be a problem with any kind of ice or, black ice, because it's really going to be too warm. And then into Sunday, again, rain, high near 53 degrees. But again, chance of precipitation is 100%. Not a lot of rain, though, only maybe half to three quarters of an inch. Again, Sunday night, rain likely, and then mostly cloudy, low of around 38 degrees. But there's about a 60% chance of rain. Again, not much. So if you're really looking for a lot of rain, that's not going to happen. But by Monday, it should be mostly sunny. Tuesday, and both Monday and Tuesday, sunny around 55 degrees. And then on Wednesday, mostly sunny, high near 56 degrees. Unfortunately, Bill, your boat, since it's not in the water, not ready to go. You can't just take a quick trip down to the shore, right, and take your boat out for a day.
Well, given the fog we're supposed to have, I'm not sure I'm going to find it.
Well, but what about Monday, Tuesday? Don't tell me you have never taken a day off when it's a beautiful day to go sailing.
Well, actually, I have, and what I'm hoping is that maybe every other Friday when it gets to be June, July, and August, I get to do that, because I'll tell you, life has gone by awful fast, and they always say that a bad day on the water is infinitely better than a good day at work.
Well, I guess a bad day almost anywhere is better than a
good day at work. Yeah. Well, it's mid-February. We've just had a 77-degree day and a 58-degree day, and it's like a taste of spring and summer for us here. So I'm getting excited. Pat, I found something really interesting online. There's a company out there I'm going to give a shout-out to, even though they're not one of our advertisers, called Nautic Ed. For those of you who are interested in learning boating safety and sail trim and how to charter your own boat, offer some very good online courses. So I'm hoping that you're able to, for those of you out there who have an interest in boating, check it out. It's www.nauticed.com. Meanwhile, guess what's starting today? Baseball spring training games. The Yankees are hosting the Tigers right now as we speak. And let's take a look at the scoreboard. Yankees won 3-1. And so far, so good for the Yankees. Let's talk about how the New York Yankees made out today, because they're my favorite team. Them and the Phillies, and then followed by, strangely enough, the New York Mets. The Phillies lost to the Blue Jays 2-1 in spring training. And, I think it's going to be a long season for the Philadelphia Phils, but let's see how the Yankees made out, folks, because baseball is here. It was, oh, hey, they're moving around again on my internet. Excuse me. Yankees 3, Tigers 1 at Steinbrenner Field in Tampa, Florida. The winner was Hale, the loser Sodders and Gallegos, so the Yankees got a save. And let's take a good look at the box score, because we know they weren't going to be playing Aaron Judge because he's still doing a little bit of rehab. So how'd the Yankees do? Well, Ellsbury, who DH'd, was 0-for-1. He was replaced by Saez, who was a pinch hitter and DH, and he went 2-for-3. Giancarlo Stanton played in the outfield, and he got a walk, but not much else. And Greg Bird played first, and he was 0-for-2. And then Austin replaced him. Aaron Hicks played center field and played half the game. D.D. Gregorius shared shortstop duties with Wade. Gleyber Torres, who's probably the second baseman of the future for the Yankees, played 4 innings. Austin Romaine caught. Miguel Andujar, a talented young third baseman up from Wilkes-Barre, who we also saw play for the Trenton team, the Trenton Thunder, played third. And Clint Frazier played in left field. Now, remember, Frazier also played at Trenton and then at Wilkes-Barre. So the Yankees look like they've had a pretty decent game. And how was their pitching? Let's take a look. They pitched Luis Cesar, who was back from Wilkes-Barre Scranton. Cesar, as you know, has struggled. He's been really good at times. He's been not so good at times, but he's a 24-year-old guy, and I think he's going to have a decent future with the Yankees. But he played 2 innings. He gave up 2 hits, 1 run, 1 earned, and he struck out 2. I know the Yankees like his fastball, curve, and the interesting slider that he throws. It's got a nasty hook towards the end of it. But we also saw some relief pitchers that we don't usually see. And I think they're playing a lot of rookies and new guys this year. Meanwhile, how about them Philadelphia Flyers, 8-0-2 over the last couple of 10 games? Flyers are red hot right now. They're playing in the NHL Met, and they've managed to tie the Pittsburgh Penguins for second place after losing 10 straight games in November and December. Flyers pulled off an interesting trade. They're down 2 goaltenders. They brought up Alex Lyon from the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. He played 2 games, won 1, lost 1, and then suddenly the Flyers made a trade. They traded a third-round draft pick next year and a player to be named later to the Detroit Red Wings for Peter Mrazek, who is a good backup goalie and probably deserves to play in the NHL, except for the fact that he's been the backup in Detroit behind Jimmy Howard. I like the way Mrazek plays. He's a stand-up goalie. He squares himself to shots very readily, almost instinctively. He covers the pipe well. He doesn't give up a lot of bad goals, and he knows how to steer a rebound. Additionally, he takes a page out of Martin Brodeur's book, The Goaltender I Admire the Most, and he's almost like another defenseman out there because he passes the puck well, he handles it well, and he's got the ability to anticipate shots. A couple guys to watch on the Flyers. Number 19, a 19-year-old kid who is playing extremely well. Got a goal last night against the Columbus Blue Jackets to put the Flyers ahead 2-1 in the third period. He is somebody to watch. I will... I'm so sorry, folks. We're having a little bit of a senior moment right now, so I can't think of his name, but I'm going to look it up right now for you.
Well, but while you're looking it up, look at the U.S. women hockey team. Did you talk about them? I was out of the room for a minute.
Pat, I'm not there yet.
I'm going to tell you. I'm going to just break in and talk about U.S. women's hockey team. They're brought home the first Olympic gold medal
since
1998 Winter Games in Japan. And with unbelievable timing, they pulled off exactly 38 years to the day. And this was 38 years to the day that the U.S. men's team made hockey history at Lake Placid by beating the Soviets. And I think that is going to, even for those of us who are not great hockey fans, we all remember that one as the miracle on the ice. So that, you know, what it took for the U.S. women to take down the Canadians in Korea. It was not only pure determination, and the what, of course, the same stuff it took for them to win their face-off with USA Hockey over fair wages and benefits, another amazing tough. But let's not get into politics. I mean, this was just amazing.
I thought the U.S. women's team had showed nothing but pure grit to skate with a Canadian team for three straight periods and an overtime, 2-2. They were right with them. They won in the shootout, which to me is tremendously exciting.
Well, it's tremendously exciting, almost unfair to either team when they both have played that well. And then, you know, the way hockey, you know, I know you're a real hockey fan, and I know the shoot-off is the way to break a tie. But, you know, it is pretty amazing. It's kind of, I don't know how they could make that any better. Remember, I do believe that football, professional football, has been, it's much better now that in overtime, the first team to kick a field goal can't win. Remember,
that's right,
for
you've got
years,
to score a touchdown.
You have to score a touchdown, because for years, almost always, the team who was able to go first in overtime, they were able to get a field goal. It was.
I always thought that
didn't.
Was chintzy.
I did too. I thought it was really unfair. I like the situation now, and so at least they have to get a touchdown,
yeah.
Or else both parties, or both, I should say, both teams. I'm using parties because I'm talking about parties all the time, but and I don't mean parties. I mean parties
litigants.
But in you know, that made it so much more exciting in professional football, and frankly, it's much more fair to do it that way. But
agree, Pat. You know, I kind of like the old NHL where in the playoffs you played until somebody scored. Now, in hockey, when I was younger, and I think until the 70s, we had the problem of you played for the when you were on the road, you played for the tie, so you could get that 1 point. And, you know, that was okay because the game would end after 60 minutes of ice time. The problem was when you got into the Stanley Cup playoffs, what happened was they would play until somebody won. So you'd get games going 7-8 periods, very exciting, it would become literally defensive battles where each team would look for an opening, and you would have the ice cleaned off and zambonied up every 20 minutes of play, and sometimes the games would go till 2 in the morning, and it was fun. I was at one playoff game where the Flyers were playing the St. Louis Blues, and it was like one of the first seasons after expansion. I think I was a college freshman or sophomore, and it was a playoff game. And at the end of regulation, it was tied 2-2, and they played 4 more periods till the Flyers won. And the Spectrum let out at 2 in the morning, and, you know, it was kind of neat getting paying for one hockey game and getting 3. But on the other hand, what was really kind of funny was that the concessionaires ran out of hot dogs and sodas, which is kind of hard. You needed a lot of coffee to stay awake to watch those games. It's also like baseball where you have extra innings.
Let's go back to hockey, though. What would be an alternative? I mean, I frankly think, although the shootout is exciting, I really think that it's unfair after two teams play as well as they've played throughout the game to, you know, it's kind of like the you know, football when they used to be able to score a, you know, with a field goal and win that way. What would be a better way? I mean, you're the hockey guy. What would be a better way? Is there something between the shoot-off and playing until their one team scores? Would there be an alternative?
I must be old-fashioned because I like to watch until somebody scores.
No, I do too. I absolutely agree. But I think that the – I mean, I'm not sure, you know, they could do, you know, two out of three shootouts. I mean, it could be something that would make it, I think, a little more
– Well, remember, the shootout is interesting because each team shoots. And if one team scores, well, then the other team better score or they lose. So sometimes you get matched goal for goal, or sometimes you get matched save for save. And what makes it especially interesting for goalies is that you get a really good goaltender. Remember, a great goalie, a guy like Dominic Hasek had a .940 save percentage, which means that out of every 12 shots, he let one get by. And that's a good goalie. So if you had a shootout and you had a 10-round shootout, statistically somebody's going to score. You may remember in the 2010, just before the Stanley Cup playoffs, the Flyers needed to win a shootout game against the New York Rangers on April 10, and they went
Bill,
goal for goal.
Only you and perhaps John have the memories that go back to April 10th of a certain year, a certain game. Not me.
Well, that may very well be, but you know, if the Packers were involved, I'm sure it would be very different, Pat. But remember,
but they don't play the number of games that are played by hockey teams every year.
Right. We've talked about this before. You think that hockey is somehow made less important or sort of watered down because they play 80 games, whereas in football you play 16. And you've got a point. Remember, every football game is anticipated for an entire week. And there's a lot to be said for that. And there's a lot to be said for not caring about what happens in on a Tuesday night on a frozen February in Edmonton when your team may be playing, but, well, you know, if they lose that one, then there's always next week or two nights later. Hockey's got a problem with too many back-to-back games, my humble opinion. I don't think 80 games is a great way to play such a demanding sport. I'd rather see the season at 60 or 65 games, but then again, I'm not Gary Bettman, and he is. So, you know, the more seats you can fill, the more revenue you get, the more you can pay your players. So if that's the way it works, that's the way it works.
But do you really think, because what was surprising to me when I've gone to the Devils games is how few people are in the stands some of the time. And I think that would they really lose revenue if they had fewer games, or would it mean that more people really attend?
Well, the New Jersey Devils have had a good season. I'm always a little shocked when I see empty seats, but remember that a lot of people don't want to go into Newark at night, whereas South Philly, you can literally walk to the arenas from where you live.
Oh, but come on. If they're not, I mean, I don't know where, you know, the whole area of South Philly, but where where they play hockey in Newark now, the parking lots around and the
well, the walk to the train's fine.
And it is just, it's very, very safe area. So that,
well, I don't have a problem going to a hockey game.
Well, I don't think anybody should. And I think just, that's why I jumped in when you even mentioned that, because, you know, that's a great area, very safe, very easy to walk to and from the train station, parking lots very close to the arena, lots of law enforcement. Now, I recognize I went to law school a zillion years ago in Newark, and you really couldn't walk between the train station and Rutgers Law School. I mean, certainly at night, not at night. I did it during the day, but nobody would let me do it at night. But that was different. And that whole area, I mean, I have to tell you, I go into Newark fairly often. I go to court. There's certain places that I would still not walk, but that people should not be intimidated or stopped from going to hockey games in Newark. So,
well, I'm not worried about going to Newark day or night. I just, you know, I go, I do what I need to do, or I go to one of the arenas, enjoy myself, or I've gone to meetings and get gatherings of different types. We have some friends that live just outside the city, and sometimes we'll go into the Performing Arts Center. I don't have a problem with Newark. But I wanted to mention, getting back to hockey, the guy who won the game last night for Philly was 19-year-old Nolan Patrick. Once again, he was a power play hero, and four times the Flyers had power plays where they in games where they weren't taking penalties, the fifth and final power play saw some of their best chances in the game. A perimeter shot sent in by Shane Gotisbehere was blocked by former Flyer goalie and now Columbus Blue Jackets goalie Sergei Bobrovsky, but he couldn't hang on, and he let that rebound loose, and 19-year-old Nolan Patrick shot at home, so he came up real big. He had a solid night, four shots. His line with Gordon Wheel and Jacob Voracek saw a lot of good looks early in the game, but really came on in the third when Oscar Lindblom moved up and Wheel returned to Scott Laughton's wing.
Well, let me ask you.
Oscar Lindblom was brought up from the Lehigh Valley Phantoms because Wayne Simmons was injured, and Simmons is one of Philadelphia's best players. He's going to be out for about 3 weeks, but he ought to be back by mid-March, and we're looking for a playoff run after lurking near the bottom of the NHL Metropolitan Division for a good first half of the season.
Well, let me ask you, Bill. I mean, 19 years old, that's pretty amazing. What do you know about Nolan Patrick? I mean, think about it, 19 years old.
Nolan Patrick, what I know about him is that he did not play for the Phantoms last year. He played in the Quebec Junior Major Hockey League, and he, I think he played for team just across from Montreal in up near Trois-Rivières, just up the St. Lawrence from them. He is 19. He's a Canadian guy. He is from Ontario. He has good speed, good stick handling skills, but he's 19 and he's going to make his mistakes. And it's interesting that Dave Haxtell, a college coach previous training, and he won a NCAA championship with North Dakota State that was played out in the Frozen Four right here in Philadelphia, is really high on him, as is Ron Hextall, the GM of the Flyers. So I think Nolan Patrick's going to be a guy we're going to want to watch over the next 10 years playing on the wing and in Philadelphia. So he's number 19, and he's a guy to watch.
And absolutely. And when you think about it, most of the kids who are 19, including a grandson of mine, are playing in the juniors now. And they come out of high school. They're recruited for the juniors if they're good enough. And they play one and sometimes 2 years and then go on to college. I mean, their goal, I mean, many of them, they obviously have a goal to go on to the NHL. But this is really pretty amazing that at 19, barring, injury or something else, this could be, what could he be? The next Wayne Gretzky? I mean, there are sometimes phenomenal hockey players that even those of us who are not great hockey fans know about.
Oh, that's for sure. Do I think he's the next Wayne Gretzky? No, I don't. I do think he's going to be a real good hockey player. I think he could be a real fixture in Philadelphia for a number of years. I think it's all upside for Philadelphia sports. We had the Eagles win the Super Bowl. The Flyers are looking better with every game. Who knows what those Phillies will do?
Let's not get too much of an ego there, but it's really nice to see somebody that phenomenal. And I wonder sometimes, though, that there are so many more. kids playing hockey in the United States. I mean, hockey was always big in Canada. And, of course, you know, that's one of the reasons why the U.S. women's hockey team has not won in so many years. But hockey, there's so many more kids playing now. And so there probably will be, more good and excellent players. The kids are starting younger, and they're getting better training. I mean, you see a lot of hockey, not only in the juniors certainly, but certainly teams right here in Hunterdon County. We see some good, hockey. If you want to go over and watch it, some of these kids are really pretty good. So,
oh yeah, that's for sure. Remember, these are kids who are skating from a time they're 5 years old, they get lessons. There's so much time and effort spent on kids' sports around here in Hunterdon County. It's worth getting out to the ice rink over on Case Boulevard between River Road and Route 202 and watching a couple of high school games because it's exciting fun. We're hopeful to have some of those folks on for the Sports Guys as guests in the future.
Well, I hope we do. And right now, let's talk. We'll have some of our sponsors give us a little information, and then we'll be back with more of the Sports Guys.
Good enough.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Retail Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113. Or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Well, we're back, and Bill Wolfson and I, our friend John, was supposed to be calling in today, but isn't. So let's talk a little bit.
We could always start saying bad things about the Red Sox and see if John calls.
Well, but before that, I think we should talk a little bit about the Olympics. A lot of people have said that they've not been interested. I really, some of the things like the half pipe has just been fascinating to me. One of the things that, you know, we always hear about injuries and we hear about athletes who have had a number of injuries. But, boy, in this half pipe, we've really seen some serious, to me, falls where they...
Let's tell our listeners what half pipe really is so that they're clear.
Oh, well, how do you explain it?
Well,
I mean,
it's
skiing.
Snowboarding, but in a in kind of half of a tube.
Well, it's very wide, half of a tube, and
climb up either wall.
Well, they snowboard up either wall, and then one of the things that they do are, and I don't know the names of all of these various.
They're like spins and flips.
Yeah, and I don't know. They all have names. They all have degrees of difficulty. And, of course, one of the most important things is the height. But if you've never watched this, I mean, just watch it once because it is, I think it is fascinating. I think it's just amazing. I can't believe, in fact, I don't even know how long that half pipe has been part of the Olympics. Do you?
I think it's for last four or five Olympics only. It's a relatively new
maybe
sport
four.
Pack.
I'm not even sure if it was five. It's fairly new.
It's exciting to watch. I'll tell you what was exciting for me. There was a brilliant women's cross country championship race, won by a Norwegian woman by about 10 seconds over a more experienced older Swedish woman, followed by a Russian woman. The cross-country skiing sport is not all that big here in the U.S., but obviously in the Nordic countries and in Russia.
Well, especially
it's a
Norway.
Big deal how people get around.
Well, especially Norway.
Oh,
and
sure.
They, in fact, you know, I don't know if I've mentioned this before on the radio, but I remember as a kid reading a book, I'm not sure if it's true or not, but reading a book about how during World War II they had kids skiing the gold, and it was either in Sweden or Norway where they would give kids these actually the treasure of the country, and they were having them, I don't remember where they were skiing, but it was really impressive to me that they would have these kids carrying, you know, bricks of gold to get it out before the Nazis took over.
Well, they were probably skiing it into Sweden because Sweden and Norway share a very long border, and most
that's
of it
probably
is woods.
But in fact, I would love to find that book again and take a look at it. But that was, you know, reminded me as kids here, depending on where you lived. I mean, we skied, but not cross-country skiing. I mean, as a kid, we did, you know, on any little hill we would ski, but we didn't have cross-country skis. So you're right. It wasn't something that was real popular in the United States until when? Maybe the late 70s?
Oh, yeah. I can tell you that although we had people competing in cross-country skiing in the Olympics for many years, usually they came out of the Army and the 1st Mountain Division, which trained up at Lake Placid, which, as you know, was the site of the 1980 Olympics, where 38 years ago this week, the U.S. hockey team beat the Russians. But I had a family member. My mother had a cousin who was in the 1st Mountain Division in World War II, and he was a ski soldier. He wore when he was training or when he was in combat in Europe, and he was in the Battle of the Bulge, they sent him and his unit into combat with rifles painted white, in white uniforms, white smocks, and cross-country skis to be in the woods in Belgium and France and Germany and fight the Germans. Cross-country skiing has a very interesting adjunct called biathlon, which is a combination of cross-country skiing and target shooting.
Well, in fact, the amazing thing about that, because of the cold in Korea, is how, and I think, well, I'm thinking of the men, but how they were actually able to stop and not freeze their hands when they had to do the target shooting.
Well, you wear gloves.
Well, but still, I mean, you know, that, you know, you would usually use, in that kind of weather, the kind of gloves that you could not use when you're shooting.
Well, because what happens is this. You're pulling off heavy gloves, and underneath it are lighter leather gloves so that you can actually get your finger around a trigger.
Well, I understand that. Probably not even leather. In my view, they probably should wear something like silk. But in any event, that is, you know, when you think about the combination of those two sports. But, you know, there was a, what about that five-time U.S. Olympian who won the first ever U.S. gold medal in cross-country skiing?
Was it a man or a woman?
A woman. And, in fact, she's a 35-year-old mom who actually managed that grueling Olympic training regime regimen while raising a family. Hey, that's something. But on the other end...
That's impressive.
The other end is we can't leave out... And the women were really, you know, really impressive in this Olympics, but we can't leave out either the men or what I would call the kids... the kid, Red Gerard, was 17 years old, and he became the youngest person ever to win, the gold in snowboarding. And, apparently the story is that he was binge watching television the night before his big race and overslept in the morning, had to borrow his roommate's jacket to compete because he couldn't find his. And, you know, apparently he certainly didn't sweat it like, you know, the small, he certainly didn't sweat the small stuff. And, you know, many of the Olympians certainly don't leave anything to chance. He did. Then he got out on the half pipe, blew his first two runs, and nailed his third for the top medal. And I guess... you know, when you talk about the range, the age range, I mean, you have a 35-year-old woman, who, after five Olympics, won the first ever U.S. gold medal in cross-country skiing. And, of course, you know, we've talked about the hockey team. And I've always been a fan of Lindsey Vonn, who is now 33 years old, and
I've always admired her too. I always thought she was a great athlete,
and I was hoping that she would be able to pull off a number of golds. But you know, she, you know, loves competing so much that you know, she's, when you think about it, she's almost twice as old as some of the other competitors, and you know, she keeps training and training, and hopefully, you know, she, well, I would hope this is not her last Olympics, although we have to understand that it might be. But the, you know, the everything in Korea, I mean, all of the, you know, the moguls, the all of the facilities that at least I've seen on television really look top-notch. I mean, I've been so impressed.
Yeah, I think the South Koreans... hosting this Olympics did a real bang-up job with the facilities. Everything you see on television looks gorgeous.
They seem to. I don't know about attendance, though. Sometimes at some of the things, it doesn't seem like there's great attendance. So I don't know. I mean, it was obviously a very expensive flight, and, you know, the Olympics always, you know, a lot of people who would like to attend can't because of the cost, but you know, that had to be much more expensive than, you know, some of the sites for the Winter Olympics.
Oh, that's true. And remember, from the East Coast here, Korea's got to be a 24-hour flight. It's a long ride. You're going to a place that's really very different, very modern, in many ways more modern than it is here in the U.S., particularly with rail travel and infrastructure. And you also are taking a little bit of a chance because who knows what's going to happen with North Korea. Meanwhile, moving on, the Olympics aren't yet over. They've been a lot of fun to watch. As you know, Winter Olympics are one of my favorite things. I'm not too big on the Summer Olympics, but we are still a couple days away from winding up. I think Sunday's the last day, Pat.
I think it is. And I'm not a big fan of the figure skating, but I actually did watch the two Russian women and the young, competitor who was kind of nowhere a year ago from the U.S. But the two Russians, and I can't pronounce their names, were absolutely unbelievable.
Figure skating to me is one of the most beautiful things in sports.
Yeah, but it's not just the dancing. I don't know what they call it even, but the regular figure skating competitions are just. These two women, when I watched them, it was just amazing, especially the one that I watched who, I mean, why she didn't get a perfect score was beyond me, but then I don't know how to score these. But it was, and of course, I've always liked not the figure skating, but the racing. And to me, the mogul is also really fascinating.
The skiing and the mogul. Figures.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a challenge. I can tell you that from the time I was 18 until I was almost 50, my wife and I skied a great deal. And
mogul?
The mogul fields were the most fun.
Did you actually did skiing on mogul, the
oh,
mogul?
Sure.
Really? Where?
Well, a couple of places, in the Poconos, in Vermont.
Really?
A great place like Mount Snow or Killington, also up in Canada in the Laurentians, although that was pre-Barbara. Also out in Utah in Deer Valley, one of the most beautiful places I've ever skied, and also Park City. I've also skied mogul fields in Switzerland. I've gone, we would take the train to the top of what's called the Jungfrau, and you ski.
So when did mogul, when did that become popular? I mean, I don't
know. Mogul skiing in the Olympics? Strictly
well,
moguls?
No, not in the Olympics, just. Period. I mean, I don't remember when I was growing up in the Midwest that.
Well, we always had mogul skiing here in the East and also in the Western areas. And the problem that you have here in the East with mogul fields is we get more ice or snow.
I was going to say, it would seem to me that it could be, could be actually dangerous with all that ice.
Yeah, and. There are certain ways they teach you to cross ice. Just get across it as fast as you can without moving your skis because they can go out from under you because the ice is so hard. The edge of your skis can't bite in as they would with new fluffy, powdery snow like you see out west or in the Alps.
Well, one of the things I know, I have one of our daughters, skied in the East and then went to school out in Denver, and
it was like night and day, right?
Well, she said she was really became an excellent skier because it was so much easier to ski in Colorado and Utah because she had grown up here, always skiing on the East Coast, never had been out there, and so she became she was actually very good. And, said she was probably better because she spent all of those years skiing here on the East Coast, which I thought was rather interesting.
Well, that, I think there's a lot of truth to that, Pat. Having learned to ski here in the East, you instinctively look for ice. You're more conscious of carving an edge and when you can and when you can't. And you learn to ski under control. When you get out west or up into the Alps and the higher ranges, you see more white, powdery, fluffy, drier snow.
Oh, it is dry. It's very dry.
It's very dry because it's so cold. And what happens is you don't get a lot of melting like you do in the East because in Vermont you can get a 38-degree day and then for a couple of hours and then If you try to ski at night, now it's 28, and what melted during the day is no longer snow, it's ice. So you become a little bit more careful about ice. You also try to ski about 10 seconds ahead, and you're watching for ice. And so when you attack a mogul field out west where the snow is drier, more powdery, fluffier, whatever you want, the edge of your skis, which are usually metal, bite a little better, you have more control, and you consequently can go a little faster, and your form is better because your form has to be good if you've been trained in the East, because otherwise you're going to fall.
Wow. Well, you know, the other thing I have to say, I think they've done a good job. Maybe it's just me, but I think they've done a good job with the human interest stories with the Olympics. I don't know. Did you see the one where you may not have, but the Korean coach of the Korean team, the South Korean team.
Which one of the teams?
The skiing.
Ski team.
Yep. I think it was ski. Maybe snowboarding, skiing. In any event, he was adopted from Korea as a, you know, maybe baby or a very young child. He brought up in, I think, Colorado or Utah, skied his entire life, became very good, but ended up now going back to Korea to be the coach of their team. I think he was in the Lake Placid Olympics, although I might be wrong. I think he might have bronzed in that Lake Placid Olympics. But then he's gone back to Korea, actually met both his birth father and birth mother, said he was so obviously, the fact that he was adopted gave him such opportunities. But what a story that he's now, you know, now back coaching that team. And of course, one of the gold medalists, women, and I'm forgetting which event it was, but her parents came here from Korea, and so now she was a gold medalist in skiing. She was one of the skiers, so now she's back in Korea, the birthplace of her parents, skiing for the USA. So, you know, charming, interesting story. In any event, I think they've done a pretty good job of, you know, filling in with some of those stories of the athletes.
I think that's really great, Pat. I did not follow a lot of these stories because, unfortunately, over the last couple of weeks, my time has gotten limited because of work demands, and it's also tax season, so I'm getting ready for that misery.
Wait a minute, Bill. It's February.
Yep.
Maybe nobody told you tax season, since you don't do tax work, correct?
Nope.
You're thinking about yourself.
I am.
Didn't you ever hear about the fact that you have until October 15th to file your taxes?
Yes, but you know, the IRS, although they allow it, I like to get it out of the way. I've always said, you know, your first loss is your best, and things are always worse in the anticipation than in the actual having to pay. So I'd rather take my lumps in March and send out the check than put up with it. So when I get home tonight, I'm going to be finishing my taxes and heading them out to my accountants on Monday or Tuesday. I like to do things sooner rather than later, because that way I figure the sooner it's over, the sooner I write the check, the sooner I get over the urge to stick my head in the oven.
Well, I have to tell you, I guess I'm the direct opposite. For my clients' things, try to get those done on time. But with my own stuff, you know, last year I remember that I was going to be traveling. I believe it was, yeah, in fact, it was to go to one of the Packer games in October. And so I actually had to call my accountant about a week earlier than I usually do in order to get the taxes filed while I was away.
Well, that's always tough. Let's not talk about taxes anymore, because
no,
I'm going to start
agree.
Getting depressed. You know, we're going to have a rainy, foggy, kind of crummy weekend. And for those of you who want to get up off that couch, I can't think of anything that I'm going to do that's sports-related this weekend, but I'll tell you what I did a couple of weekends ago with my wife. It was a beautiful day. It was about 38 degrees. We went up to Sky Manor Airport and had brunch at their little restaurant. The food was excellent, and then we sat outside on a park bench and watched airplanes, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, actually, that is. We'll do that in the spring because we don't expect most of the time to see a lot of small planes landing. I know, what was it, a year or so ago that the chamber had a function there.
Oh, we had a function up at the Alexandria Field, too, with the skydivers, remember?
No, I don't remember that one.
And,
but I do remember being able to go up and... you know, I was able to fly over my house, which is right near Round Valley. And, you know, so it's really interesting. In fact, we have many, not only small planes flying over, but we have a lot of the balloons. And, you know, soon we will have spring. And I guess the other day,
Groundhog saw his shadow.
Yeah, well, still, we haven't had, when you think about it, with all the rain, this could have been snow.
That's
so
true.
Other than the guys who are out there trying to make a living this winter doing snow plowing, I think most people have been happy that it's been rain rather than snow.
I'd rather have rain because I have to get to work and I have to get to the different places I need to be in different New Jersey cities. But, you know, I prefer snow to rain just because it's so much more fun to play in snow.
Well, that's true. And I love the snow. But what I don't like, and it usually happens and happened again this last time, we get, I don't know, I suppose we had about 5 inches, and then it's warm, and it melts, and then often it then freezes at night and it gets very icy. There were some real problems. I know last Saturday night the fog was horrendous. I didn't find any ice, but as I mentioned earlier, when going home there was a huge buck right in the middle of the road, and it was so foggy it almost seemed like it was a mirage. But you know, when you think you might see a deer in Hunterdon County, you stop.
Yep.
Even if it's in the middle of the road, you stop. And these are always, of course, on the back roads. And the problem during the fog, it's also a problem because they don't seem to have the same perception of cars as they have on a clear night. So they're more apt to run in front of you. But
well,
any of
just
that,
remember, folks, those deer are out there, and they're all trying to commit suicide.
So let's wrap it up. And
it's almost that time again. Matt.
We're going to wrap it up quickly.
It's 5:57.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you...
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over